Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 433. I'm Dave Elliott. When I was growing up, my first pet was a Siamese cat. Actually, the left side was really my pet. The right side belonged to my brother. Today, the 433rd issue of the Fantastic Four. It's Fantastic Four, Volume 3, Number 4, from April 1998. The Enemy Within, with a plot by Scott Lobdell, script by the new regular writer, Chris Claremont, and art by the new regular penciler, Salvador LaRocca. The issue begins with Ben Grimm having just waken up. He goes outside to the pier along the Hudson River, wearing a loose bathrobe, Fantastic Four boxer shorts, and slippers in the shape of tiger's heads. He lets out a big yawn as Chris Claremont gives us a bunch of unnecessary captions about how Ben Grimm swam in the Hudson River as a kid, and he was a fan of the Yankees, and he liked to watch ocean liners go out to sea, etc., etc. It wouldn't be a Chris Claremont comic without unnecessary narration. Just then, he gets hit in the head by a newspaper. Ben Grimm does, not Chris Claremont, which is wrapped in a brick. That's why I stopped subscribing to newspapers. I don't know what to do with all the bricks. So he opens up the newspaper, and he sees a message written on the paper in red that says, "Good morning, Brickhead." Is that really an insult? Because his head is made out of bricks. But even worse, the paper is missing the sports section. It's the Yancey Street Gang, those bastards. He screams out, "This means war!" He hears a voice that says, "You're not serious, are you?" He turns, and he sees that female mail carrier from a couple issues ago. Her name is Billy. She caught Ben by surprise. Like, who gets their mail that early in the morning? Unless Ben wakes up late, so maybe it shouldn't be a surprise. Just then, there's a bright flash of light coming from atop the FF's old headquarters, Four Freedoms Plaza, which, as I can see now, was not rebuilt. It's still missing the roof. Didn't they say it was rebuilt by the Thunderbolts because they moved in? I guess not. Somehow, Ben recognizes it as a cosmic energy flare. Yeah, a bright flare like that, what else could it be? Ben tells Billy that he has to go. He gets on his jet cycle, and he heads toward Four Freedoms Plaza. On the way, he contacts his teammates, who say they'll be there soon. On the messed up top floor of the building, there's a device that's putting out all this light. Ben mentions the Thunderbolts, who trashed the place before they left. He can see two figures approaching him in the bright light, so he gets his fist ready to welcome them to the building. But when they get close, he can see it's Alicia and the Silver Surfer. And the Surfer seems injured, and Alicia is helping him walk. That's kind of like the blind leading the blind, or something like that. She recognizes Ben's voice and is happy to see him, or something like that. Ben says folks weren't kidding when they said Alicia dropped off the face of the Earth. She really did. She was traveling in space with the Silver Surfer. Ben asks what's wrong with the Surfer, and the Surfer replies that his mortal mind cannot comprehend his agony. Of course, the readers who have read Heroes Reborn, we can comprehend a lot of agony. Alicia says, "Are you happy now? Does it ease the pain I may have caused you to see another suffer?" Well, that's a weird question. Like, Ben is going to say, "Oh yeah, it does." Alicia and Ben are acting like a couple that just broke up. But at this point, it's been about 10 years. Alicia explains that the Surfer was struck down without warning. Ben takes the Surfer from her, just as Reed and the others arrive in the Fantastic Car. Still, the flying bathtub. LaRocca hasn't decided to redesign the Fantastic Car yet, and he's not redesigned the FF uniforms either. Shocking! How are we supposed to know a new artist has taken over the book if he doesn't redesign everything? I'm being sarcastic, of course. Alicia mentions to Ben the threat to the entire planet that the Surfer previously mentioned. Up in the air, there's problems with a Fantastic Car, a rogue spike in the primary inverter nodes, and the systems can't handle the overload. I have the same problem in my 1999 Saturn all the time. Oh my god! My car is as old as this comic. Yikes. Reed says they're losing power and the ability to maneuver, and then it really will be like being in a flying bathtub. Which is the first reference to being a flying bathtub in the actual comic itself that I can recall. Johnny tells Sue to protect everyone on the roof with a force field, and he flames on and he melts the surface of the roof, and it gets sticky enough so when the Fantastic Car lands, it just sticks instead of sliding off onto the street below and killing a bunch of innocent people. So everyone gets out of the Fantastic Car, while Johnny goes to work putting out the fires. Sue asks Alicia if she's alright, and she is. And then Sue asks Reed what happened, and oddly enough, Reed has no idea. Not even a wild theory pulled out of his ass, which is usually full of wild theories. Meanwhile, on the other side of the world, an old plane is flying through a lightning storm. Passengers on the plane include the female reporter and her male photographer from last issue, unwilling passengers tied up and held captive by the bad guy who first appeared last issue. The bad guy tells them that they should not have meddled in affairs that were none of their business. So he's going to make them pay the price. Yeah, he's going to make them suffer by having them fly coach. They ask the bad guy questions, but he's not going to answer. He tells them they're going to die a quick and painless death. If that's the case, why load them up on the plane? Just kill them and leave them back at the monastery with the other dead monks. So somehow, the photographer, he still has his camera. A camera is an old device that used to take photos before people could take pictures with their cell phones. He snaps a photo of the bad guy, like that's ever going to see print. As the bad guy reveals his name, for those of us who can't remember last issue, even though I just read it a few days ago, his name is Crucible. So the next day, the FF, along with Alicia, are in their plane following the Silver Surfer, who's leading them to somewhere in Canada. Alicia says, he'll know our destination when he gets there. That's his way. He rides the currents and riptides of creation, the way anyone else might surf a common wave. Ben says, sounds like you know him pretty well. Alicia replies, he's my friend. I'm thinking maybe a bit more? Someone is jealous. But really, how jealous can you be when the other guy doesn't even have a penis? Ben may be a rock monster, but I'm sure inside that pair of blue swim trunks, he has another rock monster. Meanwhile, Sue and Reed are having one of those conversations about Franklin, where Sue has realized what terrible parents they are, and is thinking that maybe she should give up being the Invisible Woman. But she just likes it so much. Back with Ben, he asks Alicia if that thing with the surfer is serious. She replies that Ben has always been important to her, but when she rides on that surfboard, she feels alive in ways she can hardly describe. And it kind of scares her, too. And the two of them hug it out. Up with the Silver Surfer, he's wondering how such a frail woman has managed to win over his heart, and if it's safe for her to be involved with him. The Human Torch flies over and asks what's going on with him and Alicia. And he replies that it's none of Johnny's business. And Johnny says it is his business. She's his friend and Ben's girlfriend. But not really. They broke up like 10 years ago. Before Secret Wars and before Liza showed up in it. Never seems they officially got back together. The Surfer says it's still none of his business. And then he says, we have arrived. And Johnny says they'll talk about it later. So the plane lands, and they're in the city of Yorkton in Saskatchewan. When the Surfer lands, he still seems weak, and Johnny has to help him catch his balance. Surprisingly, they're not getting a lot of strange looks from the citizens of the town, who are going about their business. Maybe if the FF villain from issue 163 showed up, Guard, the guy with the hockey mask and hockey stick, the people there in Yorkton would freak out. Ben notes that the town seems normal, no sign of any bad guys, no death, no disaster, and the FF wonder why the Surfer has led them there. But looking out a window is a bad guy who says, what are they doing here? How could they have possibly known? They have come here to face their doom? I can't see who this is yet. Maybe it's the return of Guard. Oh, that would be so awesome. Really, it would be. Next, the FF are greeted by the local policeman, Sergeant Gray of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. He asks what's going on, and the FF don't know. He says he has a book of protocols in his office for dealing with superhero types. Usually, it's for Alpha Flight. But they don't have time for that. Just then, out pops the bad guy. And it's the last person you'd expect to see in Saskatchewan. It's the Mole Man! He says he could conquer the surface world by denying them access to its natural resources such as gold and crude oil. I'm pretty sure we could survive without gold. Apparently, he still thinks we're on the gold standard. But he's not looking to conquer the world right now. He says he's a man of peace. The Mole Man tells the FF to follow him, and they'll get more answers about what's going on. The police sergeant waves goodbye and tells the FF that maybe they should take that little guy to the doctor. He doesn't look so good. But Mole Man says, his health is good. I think maybe he meant take him to the plastic surgeon, a really good plastic surgeon. As they follow Mole Man, Johnny mentions that maybe this is a trap. Ben replies that Mole Man seems scared to him, and Sue says, with good reason, as they walk in and see that the church has been set up as some kind of medical triage center for a bunch of injured moloids. Reed estimates there are 217 of them. Reed wants to make this a more suitable environment for such a thing, and then Sue says that she wants to find the person responsible. Just then, we meet the person who's responsible when he crashes his big fist through the roof of the church. It's Terminus. Hell yeah, Terminus. We haven't seen him in a long time. He popped up for the first time during the John Byrne run, when She-Hulk was on the team. Then soon after, he destroyed the Savage Land over in the pages of the Avengers. And then he was in some of those horrible annual crossovers from the late 80s and early 90s. Ben says he thought he was dead. I'm surprised Ben knows who he is. Ben is surprised that the Silver Surfer also knows who he is, as Terminus is feared and hated throughout the galaxy. More than even Galactus. More than even Bill Cosby. He's a big, scary son of a bitch. And now, he's grosser than ever. They notice that his body is made up of thousands of individual moloids. It's pretty gross. Just thousands of moloids stuck together into one big body. Reed is discussing their condition in a very clinical manner, which pisses off the Mole Man, who calls him a monster and accuses him of treating his people like lab specimens. He should talk. He treats them like slaves, which is worse. Reed says Terminus is using a cascading genetic virus to rewrite their DNA codes, so he needs to come up with a counter-agent to restore them to health. Mole Man apologizes for getting mad at Reed, since he really is the only one that can cure the moloids. It's not like Pfizer is coming up with a pill to cure Terminus genetic virus mutation in moloids. So before they can cure the moloids, they gotta tear them apart from Terminus without killing them. And they also gotta do something before Terminus starts adding human bodies to his collection to get bigger and bigger that way. So they all try to attack Terminus, but Johnny gets there first, as always, and his attack does no good, as always, and he gets knocked to the ground, as always. He really is useless. They should just leave him at home to answer the phone. As he's flying backwards, he's about to hit the street, so he burns really hot. He burns a hole through the street and lands in this underground cavern below, into a stream of water. A mysterious person shrouded in shadows helps Johnny out and pulls him from the water, and leaves him alone by the water's edge, not bothering to answer Johnny's questions, "Who are you?" Back up top, it's clobbering time as Ben rips into Terminus, trying to tear as many moloids free as possible. Over with the Surfer, the entire thing, the moloid suffering, is giving him a big headache. "Welcome to the club, Surfer. Welcome to the club." And the Mole Man is begging the Surfer to do anything he can to help save his people. Back with Ben, he has Sue holding him with a force field so he can punch Terminus in the face over and over again, which is the only part of him that is 100% his own, kind of like a reverse version of Michael Jackson. As he pounds Terminus in the face, this affects his control and allows more of the moloids to break free. Reed, meanwhile, is busy rounding them up so they don't rejoin the collective body of Terminus. After a while, all the Moloids have broken free, and Terminus falls to the ground, unable to move. The Silver Surfer heads over to his head, and he starts trying to use his powers to cure the Moloids from the Terminus virus that makes them his slaves. This makes Mole Man feel bad, like a dick, because he's been treating them like slaves for years. Sue tells Mole Man that it's never too late for him to change, and he replies, "Well, not if Terminus isn't defeated." I think Mole Man has learned the power of love. Up near Terminus's head, the Surfer is letting out all his cosmic energy. Alicia wonders what's going on, and she starts heading toward the Surfer, even though Ben yells at her to get back. She says there's a pattern to what is required of him, and she can show him what it is? Like, what the hell? How can she do that? Of course, my other theory about Alicia is that she's not really blind. Do you ever see her use a cane or a guiding eye dog? No. But being blind, it sure does help her career. There's a big explosion. Ben yells out, "Alicia!" But when the smoke clears, out comes the Silver Surfer and Alicia, and they're both okay. Terminus, on the other hand, seems to have been destroyed. All Ben can think about is how close the Surfer and Alicia seem, and he's jealous. Mole Man is so happy that his Moloids are free, he jumps in and he's body surfing, like he's in a friggin' mosh pit of Moloids. Before the story ends, Ben has a few words for the Silver Surfer and Alicia. He tells them that he wishes them joy and happiness, and tells the Surfer that she's a great lady, and if he doesn't treat her well, he'll answer to him. Of course, Ben doesn't have anything to worry about because the Silver Surfer's book gets canceled later in 1998, and she ain't gonna keep dating some loser without his own comic. And so that's the end of this double-sized issue. Yay! And coming next time, the bad guy, Crucible! Boo. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes at iTunes and find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
Oh, what a shame that your back used to bleed on St. Valentine's, and you sat in a chair thinking, boy, I'm such a stop.